Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is September 11th, 2011. And we are continuing with our shiur in redemption. In Parsha Shmos, we're on page 314. Today we'll be an abridged shiur, partially because of my tardiness, and the other reason because of Rabbi Feldman and Rabbi Feldman's building blocks, which will start at 8 o'clock this evening. So we are going to begin from Pasuk Tes Vav, verse 15. We read some of this last time, but we'll start from there. It'll give us a good starting point. So, it is where we got up. We went further than that, no?
No, we got to 14.
Did we do 14?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Okay, so then 15 is good. So, we know that Moshe and Aaron came before Paro to tell him to let the Jews go. Paro refused and responded by making things worse by taking away the straw and now making the work much, much more, 10 times worse than it was before. So the Shotrim, who were the overseers of the work, the Jewish overseers of the work, they now were responsible to make sure that the Jews did the work and kept to their quotas, even though they had a lot more work to do. What's the word they used for them? The task, the foreman. Okay. So Pasuk Tezvav, verse 50. Oh, and I'm sorry. And because they were unable, the Jews were unable to keep up the work, the Shotrim, the foreman, got beaten by the Nogsim, by the Egyptian taskmasters, because they, the foreman, the Shotrim, refused to beat their fellow Jews. And we already mentioned last time that because of that, the Shotrim would later become the leaders of the Jewish people. But now the Shotrim come before Paro to plead their case. Vayavau Shotrei v'nei Yisrael, and the foreman of the B'nai Yisrael came, Vayitzaku el Paro lemar, and they cried out to Paro saying, Lama sa'asecha la'avadecha, why are you doing this to your servants? Tevin ein nitan la'avadecha, straw is not being given to your servants. Ulevenim omrim lanu asu, and you're telling us, where we are being told to make bricks. Vinei avadecha mukim, and behold, your servants are being beaten. V'chatas amecha, and it is a sin for your people, which means we are. It is causing that we are now doing something wrong. We're unable to keep up with what we have to do. So Paro responds, Vayomer, he says, Nirpim atem nirpim, you are lazy, you are lazy. Al kein atem omrim, therefore you are saying, Nielcha nizbecha la Hashem, let us go and let us sacrifice to Hashem. V'ata l'chu ivdu, and now go and work. The seven lo'ina sein lachem, and straw will not be given to you. The sochen leveinim titenu, and the quota of bricks you will give. You will still meet the same quota of bricks. Vayiru shotrei v'nei Yisrael osam, and the foreman of the B'nai Yisrael saw the B'nai Yisrael, bira lemor, with evil saying, meaning that the foreman were forced to go back to the Jewish people and tell them the bad news. Lo sigru'umi livnechem dvaryom biyomo, you may not reduce your quota of bricks as you have in the whatever you have to do each day. You have to each day still meet the same quota of bricks. So they were forced to go back to their fellow Jews and tell them that we regret to tell you, but we must meet those quotas. And we can't reduce the amount. So before we read further, I would like to get further tonight. But before we read further, let's make a couple of observations. So they come before Paro, and they plead with Paro, and Paro refuses to give in. So we know the Medrash that says, distressing Medrash that says that the Jewish people, now that they needed to make bricks and were unable to make enough bricks, so they were forced to put their children in the walls in place of the bricks, that the children would be used as the walls themselves, as they would be cemented into place. Obviously, they were killed because they couldn't meet the quota of bricks, and that was a particularly gruesome and cruel thing that the Egyptians did to the Jewish people when we were unable to meet the quota of bricks. This is hinted to in the words in Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16, when the foreman, the Shotrim, say, Tevin ein nitan la'avodecha, straw is not being given to your servants, ulevenim omrim lanu asu, and we are being told to make levenim. Now levenim are bricks. But you see that it's very easy to read that as banim, ulevanim, and to children. That in place of the bricks, we are being forced to use children. That is the remez, that is the hint, that is where it's hinted to. And Pyro says, no, you're being lazy, and therefore, yeah.
Isn't there some midrash that some child was pulled?
Yeah, yeah. So later on, Moshe cries out to Hashem about this, and Hashem tells Moshe, Moshe says it's a cruel and terrible thing to do. Hashem tells Moshe, then take one child out. And Moshe takes the child out, and that child is revived and comes back to life. Comes back to life from death. That child ends up being the idolatrous Micha that brings an idol with him with the Jewish people, and all kinds of terrible things happen because of that. Now, the message of that particular incident is to show that those who were killed were not ones that were going to be productive anyway. That's an interesting way of thinking about it, and it's a difficult message, which means that which is that one can ask, what is the proper outlook when, God forbid, a tragedy like this happens? So do we look at it as that somebody, a child, was taken before their time, or do we look at it as that they were supposed to die at this time, and then Hashem brought it about through this evil person who wanted to kill the child? So it's a philosophical question. We've talked about it here before, but there is a Gemara like this where where one of the sages, Nebuch, lost a daughter. A daughter died, and somebody came to be Menachem Avel to console him, and said something which none of us would even dream of saying to console somebody. You wouldn't console somebody with this. But what he said to the person is that we know that Hashem spared the entire nation of Moab and the entire nation of Ammon just for two women. The entire nation of Moab was spared just because of Ruth. The entire nation of Ammon was spared just for Naama. That's the only reason why they were spared. The whole nation didn't deserve to be spared. They should have been killed out. But they were spared only for those two women. So he said to him, you see that if there is anything good that will come out of the nation, Hashem would spare the entire nation. All the more so, if there was anything good that would have come out from this daughter, Hashem would have spared the daughter. Mm-hmm. Evidently, nothing good was going to come out of her. So what are you upset about? Now, that sounds very cruel. We would never say something like that. How could we say something like that? That's not a way you console somebody, God forbid, who loses a child. I mean, right? That's a cruel thing. If you take what the sage was saying as, meh, your daughter was no good for nothing anyway, so that's very cruel. But if what the sage was saying is that evidently your daughter already fulfilled her purpose in this world, that there was no longer a purpose for her. She fulfilled it in her short years, where most of us need 120 years to fulfill our purpose. But your daughter filled it in 8, 9, 10, whatever years that she was on this earth. That is a consolation, right? It depends how you understand what he was saying. Obviously, he wasn't saying, oh, she was an ogre. He was saying to him that if she had more to do, if God had more of a plan for her, he would have spared her, just like he spared the entire nation of Moab and Ammon just for two women. So evidently, if your daughter, he says to him, died, then, and apparently it was of natural causes, so then apparently she fulfilled her mission. We never know when we come into this world what our mission is. None of us know for a fact, and we don't know how many years we need to complete that mission. But some people, their mission is not a 120-year mission. It's only an 8-year mission, or a 2-year mission, or a 30-day mission. Some missions are very, very short. And we don't even understand that. How could there be a mission that only takes 2 days? God forbid. Right? How could there be? We don't understand that. And that's where we have to say God knows what he's doing, and we don't question that. There are some missions that are very, very short. The question, though, is when do we apply that way of thinking, and when do we apply a different way of thinking? In other words, when a person, God forbid, is killed by a... It's one thing for a person to die of natural causes. It's another thing where you have a murderer who kills somebody at a young age. So do we say that that person fulfilled their mission in this world and they were going to die anyway, but because this evil person used their free will to kill, so God made a shidduch. He brought someone who... It was their time to die anyway, because they fulfilled their mission, and he brought a murderer who wanted to do something evil and did it, and now the murderer is liable for murder. Do we look at it that way? Or do we look at it that no, the person who was murdered had a mission that wasn't accomplished. That person would have lived a lot longer and done a lot more with their lives, and there was a mission that was left unaccomplished, and this murderer cut somebody down that would have done a lot more, and therefore the world is now lacking. The world is missing. There's a mission that is incomplete, and something needs to be done to make up for the fact that that person is no longer here. Those are two diametrically opposed ways of looking at the same event. So what Hashem was telling Moshe in this particular case, and I don't know if it applied to every child that was put into the buildings, but at least in that case, in many of the cases, Hashem was telling Moshe, the children who were put in the buildings were ones whose mission was over. And saving them, you couldn't have saved them, but if you pull out of the building and I give you the ability to bring them back to life, you will see that it was not, the mission was over for that child, and bringing them back to life was a bad thing. That's what he was saying to him. That doesn't mean that every time, you're not going to say that every person who was killed in the Holocaust, that their mission was over. I'm sure there were those whose mission was over, but we're not going to say that for 6 million people. So when do we say one thing, the mission was over, and when do we say the person was cut down before the mission was over? I can't answer that question. No one alive can answer that question. But there are those two paradigms. Sometimes a person who dies that we view as a tragedy, rightfully, because no one should die young. We view it as a tragedy. But from a godly perspective, it might not be a tragedy. It might be that was the end of their mission. Whereas there are others who are killed at an age where, both from our perspective and from a godly perspective, it's a tragedy. Their mission is unfulfilled. And when you say one way and you say the other, I can't possibly answer that question. But we do have both concepts floating around out there. So share that, that's correct. Yeah.
What's the purpose of seeing a child in a brick?
Who knows? I can't answer. What's the purpose of children getting sick? I can't.
That's like the cruelty is beyond conception.
Yeah. There's I can't give you an answer that is satisfying. I can't possibly give you an answer. I can point to situations where there was terrible suffering and a lot of good came out of it, but it won't make you feel good about the suffering. It won't say, oh, okay, then it's good the person suffers. It's very hard from a human perspective. We are...
Like you said, of the Holocaust, some of the things
yeah,
just
yeah, yeah, beyond, they're just barbaric. It's just beyond, right? We see things from a very limited perspective. We only have our two eyes, and we see from a very limited perspective. We only see the here and now. We only see what our brains can comprehend. Hashem is looking from a global, universal perspective. He said, looking at it from a timeless perspective. He's got everything. He knows everything. He doesn't just see. He knows deep down what's going on. He knows everything. And from his perspective, there's much more going on. We don't see it. We don't see it all. And we're not expected to. That's the thing. We're not expected to look at the Holocaust and say, oh, it was all good. We're not expected to say that. That's not, we're human beings. And when we see a tragedy, we're expected to look at it as a tragedy. We accept it because we say it's God's will, but we're not expected to smile and laugh about it. That's not a human thing. That's beyond us. Yeah.
Thinking that maybe both concepts can exist at the same time. Which is just so beyond our comprehension, it could be that both reactions, both.
Okay, I don't want to say that that's not possible. I just say that it's something which I don't know how to logically fit that together. But who knows? You know, maybe it is true. Maybe it is possible.
Mrs. Darkman, you have something to say?
I'm just going to say that our whole Jewish history is full of that. I mean, the good times in Jewish history, and then we're always hated, even to this day, that you have, you know, the Chanukah massacres, you have the pogroms, you have the Inquisition, you have the Fogel family that was slaughtered, an infant 6 months old. Jewish history is full of that, and I don't think we'll ever comprehend it, because we're just humans. We're limited in our ability, we don't have the clarity. And even the Nazis, they took the people off the cattle cult, they took the babies and... My mother said they smashed the baby's mm-hmm. head into the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And those who were sick and young, immediately into the crematoria. But we don't have the clarity to understand.
Right, right. There's no way for us to understand that. And we're not expected to.
No.
We're not expected to.
A different subject. I'm surprised and puzzled here where it says, the foreman of the children of Israel came and cried out to Paro. I would have thought that to get to...
Okay. Okay, so the question is, how much time are we talking about over here? The way it reads, it seems like it's almost like the next day.
Yeah.
Right. There is a medrash that, and I have to admit that I had never seen this medrash till today, till I was preparing for this year. But there is a medrash that Moshe, after Moshe came before Paro, and it backfired, that Moshe left, that he saw that he was hurtful to the Jewish people, where he thought he was going to be helpful, instead he was hurtful. And he left and went back to Midian for some say 3 months, some say 6 months, while this was going on. And it was only after that amount of time that then Hashem appeared to Moshe and told him to return to Egypt, and he came back to Egypt, and then the story ensues with the 10 plagues, which we're going to get to very shortly. But that there was actually a 3 or 6 month gap. And the Medrash continues that the foreman, the Shotrim, were waiting for an audience with Paro for a long time. It wasn't like they immediately got in. It was one of these, you know, because they were being beaten and they were crying out, and you know, and it was, and eventually Paro relented and gave them an audience. And then but did not give up his, you know, his stance. So the Pasuk continues on page 316. Pasuk Chav, verse 20. So this is continuing with those same Shotrim, these foremen. Vayifgu'u es Moshe ve'es Aharon. They met Moshe and Aharon. Nitzavim likrasam, standing to greet them. B'tzesam meis Paro. When they came out from Paro. Vayomru aleichem, they said to them, Yere Hashem aleichem v'yishpot. Hashem should appear upon you and judge you.
Who said to whom?
Okay, it seems that it is the Shotrim, the foreman, speaking to Moshe and Aaron. They said, may Hashem appear before you and judge you. It's a, this is a, what?
Is it
Yeah, they're invoking heavenly judgment against them. Asher hiv'ashtem esreichenu, that you have soured or spoiled our spirit, ve'enei faro uve'enei avodav, in the eyes of paro and in the eyes of his servants, v'asascherev bi'adam lahargenu, to put a sword in their hands to kill us. Meaning, until now we were just slaves. Okay, a slave existence is not fun, but it's existence. Now, you've gotten them so riled up and so angry at us and so nervous about us that you've created an untenable situation where they've put so much work upon us that they're going to beat us and kill us regularly. You put the sword in their hands. May God judge you for that. Meaning, may God judge you and punish you, Moshe and Aaron, for having done that. So that they are invoking heavenly judgment. This is something which one should never do. That's a very dangerous thing to do, to invoke heavenly judgment against somebody. It's a form of a curse. I mean, to say, may God get you, may God get that person, it's a very dangerous thing to say. And the reason why it's a very dangerous thing to say is because when someone says that, when someone says, may God punish that person for what they've done, may God take care of that person, what happens is Hashem does do that, but he first looks into the affairs of the one who spoke. He says, well, let's see how clean your slate is that you are asking that I judge somebody else. And none of us want Hashem to examine our slate. So you never want to be in a position where a person is trying to bring God's wrath down upon somebody else, because then Hashem says, well, who are you to say that? Now, this is between Jews. When it's a case of, let's say, the kina, the lamentation that we say on Tisha B'Av concerning the Holocaust, concerning the Nazis, there is a line that may God bring the pain and the suffering back on the heads of the perpetrators. There is a line like that. That's appropriate, because there's no question that what they did was evil, and we are asking that God take revenge on our behalf. And that's fine. That's enemies of the Jewish people, and we're asking that Hashem bring punishment. When it's very dangerous is when it's between ourselves. We can have situations where we get very angry, where someone hurts us, where we feel stabbed in the back, etc. Never, ever, ever invoke God's judgment against the person. That's a very dangerous thing to do. Not a smart thing to do. But here, that's what they do.
You can say things like Shvoch HaMascha.
Right, that's right. We say the Haggadah.
Right.
We say to Hashem, pour your wrath on our enemies.
Right.
That's appropriate. That's appropriate. It's the enemies of the Jewish people.
Right.
Now, the difficulty with this pasuk, this verse, is that for them to have done this, for the foreman, the shotrim to have done this, means that they did something which is inappropriate. They asked for God's judgment against Moshe and Aaron. Now, we could say that they did it because they were under duress. They were getting beaten, and it's very hard. But we know that they are treated as tzaddikim, as great righteous people, and later on they're going to lead the people. But Chazal, our sages, pick up from the word nitzavim, which means standing. Nitzavim likrasam, standing to greet them. And Chazal tell us, our sages say, that anytime you see the word in the Chumash, nitzim, which means fighting, or nitzavim, nitzavim means standing defiantly, then it is a reference to Dasan and Aviram. Dasan and Aviram, those two, Moshe's detractors, those who were the thorns in Moshe's side. They were already in Parsha Shmos, they were the two who were fighting, that because of them Moshe had to run away to Midian, because they told Paro that he's the one who killed the Egyptian. They are here now, they're the ones who are going to get involved with the Mun, to discredit Moshe with the Mun. We'll get them with Hashem and Parshas Beshalach, and we will find them with the rebellion of Korach. They will be front and center over there. Eventually they'll be killed in the rebellion of Korach. So, right.
So they were part of the foreman.
That's why they got out of Egypt, because they weren't all bad. They were foremen. They were shotrim. They also got beaten on behalf of the other Jews, but they had a vendetta. They didn't feel that Moshe was handling the situation appropriately. They believed that the way that you deal with the Egyptians is through political measures, through rising in the ranks, through being as submissive as possible, but not in any way trying to antagonize the Egyptians. And therefore, they say over here, may God bring judgment upon you, because you have dried up, you have spoiled our spirit. We had a rapport with the Egyptians. We felt we were getting places. We were trying to help our fellow Jews. And
then he's serving with the... it wasn't Moshe and Aaron.
Right. According to this, the word Nitzavim is not referring to Moshe and Aaron. It's referring to Dasan and Aviram. Dasan and Aviram, it's not all of the foremen, it's these two. These two. Maybe they had a little bit of a following, but these two were the ones, the primary ones. They're the ones who brought this judgment against Moshe. Now, the Torah does not record a response. Moshe does not respond directly to Dasan and Aviram, because Moshe felt the same way. Moshe felt that here his actions only caused more pain and suffering, which is the last thing Moshe wanted to do. And remember, Moshe never asked for this job. Moshe never wanted to do it in the first place. Remember that he was reluctant, and he refused and refused and refused until Hashem wore him down, and he finally took the position. He didn't want to do this. Now he goes, and it backfires in his face. So instead of answering Dasan and Aviram, Moshe continues with Pasuk Chaf Beis. Vayashav Moshe el Hashem. Moshe returns to Hashem vayomar, and he says, Hashem, lama hareos alam hazeh, why have you done evil to this nation? Lama hazeh shalachtani, why did you send me? Umeaz basi al paro l'daber bishmecha, from the time that I came to Paro to speak in your name, hey ra la'am hazeh, it has been evil to this nation. He has done evil to this nation. V'hatzel lo yitzal tasamecha, and you did not save your nation. You didn't take them out. So Moshe complains to Hashem. And finally Hashem responds, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, atos sireh asher esel l'faro, now you will see what I'm going to do to Paro. Kiviyad chazaka yeshalchem, because with a strong hand he will send them out. Uviyad chazaka yegareshem me'artzo, and with a strong hand he will chase them out of his land. Now you will see, says Hashem to Moshe. Now you will see. So what is Hashem's response to Moshe? There are at least two meanings that are being implied over here, and we'll mention them, and then I think we're going to have to stop for the evening. The one is what Rashi writes, which is that Hashem was giving rebuke to Moshe, saying, Moshe, you questioned me. You didn't accept my ways. You have ancestors, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, I made promises to them all the time. And after I made promises to them, things only got worse. Happened all the time. Avraham, I promised him the land, and he had to buy a burial plot for Sarah. Yitzchak, I promised him, and he had to fight for wells. He had no water to drink, he had to fight for wells. Yaakov, I promised him the land, he had to buy a place near Shechem in order to live there. I promised them, and I did not keep my promises in their day. None of them ever complained. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, none of them complained. None of them said to me, Hashem, you said, what's going on? And Moshe, you're complaining against me. Hashem says to Moshe, as a result of this, Atasira, now you will see what I'm going to do to the Egyptians, but you will not see the conquest of Eretz Israel. And this is one of the reasons why Moshe loses his right to go into the land of Israel. Not the final reason, as we know the main reason is hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock, but there is an element of this as well, where he loses the ability to go into the land of Israel. Now you're going to see, but you won't see in the future. But there's another element to what Hashem is telling Moshe, and that is that now that the Egyptians have made things worse, now that they have, instead of responding positively to my overture of letting the Jews go, instead, not only did they refuse, but Paro made things worse, now you're going to see what's going to happen to them. Hashem says to Moshe, it's true things got worse, but there was a purpose in it. It wasn't just haphazard. My purpose in allowing things to get worse is because it gave me the right to bring the plagues against the Egyptians. As long as it was just slavery and they weren't showing their true colors, then it would not have been justifiable to bring the plagues against them. But once they were given the ability to let you go, and not only did they refuse, but they beat you, and they took the boys and put them in the walls, and they made things worse for the past 3 or 6 months, they're showing their true colors. Now you're going to see, and they're going to see also. Now the plagues are about to happen. They're going to get their just desserts.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.